Hi, I'm Dr. Patricia Grabarek.
And I'm Dr. Katina Sawyer, and welcome to Thriving at Work, a Worker Being podcast.
You can learn more about us on our website, workerbeing.com. You can join our email list or follow along on social media, like on LinkedIn or Instagram. And if you want our top tips for workplace wellness for 2024, we have a link in our show notes to a free downloadable. So today we're going to be talking about what it means to have too much psychological capital. But before we get started, Katina, I'm going to have you do the honors of making a big announcement for us.
Yay. So the announcement is that we signed a book contract. It's Woo-hoo! Very, very exciting. And we are really pumped to share our research. And actually, some folks listening out there might have been a part of our research. So now you know, like, it's trucking along, which is cool. And we are just really excited to share some of our thinking and ideas around how leaders can create happy and healthy workplaces.
Yes. So it's coming to life. I know we've talked about wanting to write a book for so long. I mean, we talked about our research a lot and then really probably not publicly talking about the book as much. But in one-on-one conversations with a lot of you folks, we've talked about this book and like our dream for this book. And it's happening. Like, we have a publisher. We're working with Wiley. And right now we're targeting spring of next year for it to be out and in your hands. So we've got a lot of work ahead of us, but so excited. I'm so excited about it.
Yes. And we will totally be keeping you posted about the process as well. So if anyone out there has wanted to write a book or thinks that they, you know, would benefit from learning about that process, you'll definitely hear more from us about what it's like. We have some fun activities on our weekends. We'll be full of writing for the next several months, and we're going to be getting together a couple times to work on it. So you'll hear plenty about the process and hopefully be excited to read what we have to say when it comes out.
Yes, I would definitely encourage, if you're interested to learn more about the book, to join our email list. So again, there's a link in our show notes. If you follow the link to the downloadable, you'll also be able to sign up to our email list there. And that way, you know, you can get all the updates live. Like, we're definitely gonna be updating there more frequently and being able to dive into some of the details of the process further there than rather than the podcast. So we'll be continuing to focus on research here. We'll talk about it from time to time, but I think the listserv is going to be the best place to go. Get on our email list and we can send you all the information as we go through this process.
Yes. Get on it, friends. We won't let you down. It'll be a fun journey to watch, I think.
I think so. And if we ever seem frazzled, you know, it's probably because we were writing a lot.
Yes, that's true.
All exciting stuff. But I'm going to shift gears. I mean, super excited. I can't wait for it all. But we'll go into our topic for today. And I have a question for you. We're talking about too much psychological capital. And I do a quick refresher. Psychological capital, four resources that make it up that you can grow and develop in. And it's self-efficacy, hope, optimism, and resilience. And that leads to my question for you is, have you ever interacted with someone at work that has too much optimism, and did that ever create any issues?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I don't know that I can think of a specific person, but there's like a subtype of people, I think, where like I'm working on a project where we're looking at sort of the downsides of hoping. And one of the things that makes being overly hopeful a problem is that you kind of ignore the realities of what's going on in your environment, and you don't adjust appropriately to respond to those realities. And some of that's related to conversations in society that you might have heard about, like toxic positivity, which is like, you know, everything's not great and there's no wiggle room or allowance to recognize that things aren't going so well. And so I think, you know, there's always a sense to me that if a person is just so nice that they never see a downside to anything or a downside to a person, or they're not like willing to give any critical feedback or like anything like that, I always get like suspicious of that, because I'm like, well, that can't be true. And that's like maybe just me being overly suspicious. of nice people. Like, I don't know. I don't know what that says about me, but that's one. And then I definitely have worked with people who are like overconfident. And some of the research shows that the least, like, it on a scale of like a performance scale from 1 to 5, let's say, on a performance review, the ones are the most likely to have inflated self-views. So like they're more likely to rate themselves a 3 when they're a 1, whereas like 5s and 4s tend to undersell. So like a 5 is more likely to give themselves a 4, and a 1 is more likely to give themselves a 3. And I think that that can lead to some distorted views of actual opportunities to improve. And you know, I'm not going to name any names of people like that because I feel they may be identifiable information. But I think like that as a theme, I have seen that happen.
I mean, I agree with both of the things you just said. I have too questioned very nice people. So I have a friend's wife who is, I mean, she is like sugar. She is just like the sweetest, nicest person out there. Very non-judgmental, like absurdly nice. And when I first met her, I like literally left being like, wow, that girl's fake. I do not like her. I was just not into that. It. And then I realized later on, and I love her now. And honestly, once you get to know her, she does get a little bit more spicy, but generally speaking, she is super, super sweet. And it's just who she is, and it's just not what I'm used to. So I've definitely been in that boat of being a little bit wary of overly nice people. So maybe that's, like you said, maybe that says something about us or our experiences or something.
We're like, you're too nice. What's happening? But I think that's true. It does like raise a flag. It makes you question whether the person's being real because it seems like a little less vulnerable maybe or something. Like, it's less common that that's like a genuine stance that someone has. And it's more common that people are using that to like cover up their real feelings or whatever the case may be.
Exactly. Yes. And then I think also from what you're saying about the confidence or like kind of the self-efficacy component. Yes, definitely true that people that are on the low end of the performance scale are more likely to be confident and overrate themselves. And there's a little bit about that in this study. We'll talk a little bit about like what their thoughts are on having too much self-efficacy. So I think there's obviously a need for humility in the workplace, and overconfidence can breed a lot of issues, not just like blindness to your developmental areas, but there's other things that can come from it. But going back to the optimism piece, I did want to highlight, like, I have worked in situations where I've had some really, really optimistic, like, customer success manager type people on teams that I've worked with. And they were always super positive about where projects were going and how the client was going to react to things, and just like always thought that the best thing was going to happen. And while that's great going in with like a really good mindset, at some point it created challenges for the team because they weren't willing to participate in like risk mitigation strategies and really focusing on things that can make sure that it's going to be delivered really well and like find the gaps and the holes and things they might complain about. So like the rest of the team then is doing kind of that thought process and strategy around what happens if something goes poorly or someone reacts badly to something, and this person doesn't do that because they're just super positive. And so that did create some friction on teams I've worked on.
Yeah, I think it's like there's a difference between being optimistic and having blinders on to actual challenges that you might face along the way. So it sounds like maybe some of those folks had some blinders on, and then when the challenges crop up, you haven't anticipated them or you haven't mitigated them to the extent that you could. But I am curious though, because there are some pieces of psychological capital. It's a combination of efficacy, hope, resilience, and optimism. And like hope has to do with like realistically considering challenges. Resiliency has to do with bouncing back from challenges. So as a whole, I think that's kind of interesting that as a collective, too much of it might be a problem.
Yes. And that leads it's a great segue into our takeaways. So let me talk about those, and then we can definitely dive into some of that because it is the combination piece that we're looking at here. So our top three takeaways from this paper. Number one, we learn in the study that being engaged at work and having enough resources on the job. So whether that's, you know, being able to kind of influence the work you're doing, things like that, actually improves your psychological capital.
Mm-hmm.
Takeaway two, burnout and having a lot of job demands can actually undermine your growth in psychological capital.
Mm-hmm.
But then takeaway number three is that too much of psychological capital can actually hurt your engagement and your ability to use the resources on the job.
That is really interesting. And yeah, I know we're going to dig further into it, but I feel like, you know, okay, I have the resources that I need to do my job. I'm going to feel really optimistic and hopeful and like I can bounce back from challenges and like I can do this. And I don't have those resources. I'm burnout. Yeah, I might feel a little bit more crabby about my prospects. But I do think it's interesting because I think there's this idea that more is always good. The most resources you can have, the best state you can be in, all of that is always going to be the most positive outcome. And I think in this instance, you're saying like there's a cap to that. So how do we find that balance?
Yes, exactly. And I know we've talked a little bit about what is included in psychological capital, and we'll have a link in the show notes to an article that defines it in more depth, and another article on how to develop psychological capital. So I think both those things are really important. And psychological capital is like such a great thing in the positive psychology research. We know that it has an impact on your well-being and your health. It has impacts on your productivity and performance and goal achievement. So there's a lot of really, really good things about psychological capital. But this study and a couple others that they cited are starting to show that there might be some downsides when you get too high on the scale. And it sounds like your work too on the hope side is showing some of that as well. So it seems like just in general, being too high on all these things can actually create some challenges.
Yeah. And I want to shout out too that Adam Grant and some colleagues have a paper from a while ago called The Too Much of a Good Thing Effect, which doesn't look at necessarily this concept and too much of it. But, you know, I think there's common knowledge out there, like common perception out there that, for example, like the friendlier you can be, the better it is. And, you know, they started looking at some of the research and realized, oh, you know, actually, if you're like the most gregarious person, you might be less productive because you're constantly taking time away from working to socialize with people. And so in certain jobs, you could be too friendly. And so these, you know, things that we generally think of as being super positive sometimes fall off a cliff if you have like an extreme amount of them. So this idea of too much of a good thing is really interesting and opened up kind of a whole new realm of research on stuff that we thought was good sort of uniformly, and then we find out later is not good all the time.
Definitely. And that paper I think is super interesting and also very important in where we've moved in looking at personality characteristics, different types of things on the job, right? We can always overdo it and get too extreme in certain directions. So I that's why I really like this paper too. The one that I'm posing today is because of that. Like, we know psychological capital is important, and we're still going to tell you that if you need to kind of help improve your team's performance and well-being, that you should focus on developing psychological capital in them. That is still going to be a recommendation from us. But given what we found in this paper, we want to make sure that it's balanced, and that if you're starting to see people disengaging and getting to a point where maybe they don't seem as productive and effective anymore, maybe they've gone too far in the other direction. Like, they're way too high on these things and potentially creating challenges and problems along the way. So anyways, I can dive into a little bit more of the details of the study if you're interested.
I am very interested.
Right answer.
Yes. What if I was like, I'm not interested at all. I'm sorry.
I'd be like, okay, that's well, a wrap, that's it.
Folks. The episode's over.
No more.
No, I'm interested. Go ahead.
Perfect. So the study here was done because the authors actually were interested in understanding the cycle of things like job demands and job resources and how they impact psychological capital. And they thought there would be a cyclical effect, meaning if I'm engaged in my job and I've got a lot of resources, and in this case, the resources they were looking at in the way they measured it, just as an FYI, is influence at work. So like, are you able to influence the amount of work that's being assigned to you, the type of work that's being assigned, and then the developmental opportunities, like are you able to learn new things in the job? So those are the job resources they're referring to. And on the flip side, the demands are like, do you have too much to do? You don't have enough time to complete your tasks, and like emotionally demanding or charged work. So just to kind of set the stage there, but they assumed like, okay, if you're engaged on the job and you've got this ability to influence the work and you have developmental opportunities, that you're going to then increase in your psychological capital. And then if you're higher on psychological capital, your engagement's going to go up even higher. You're going to be, your resources are going to continue to increase on the job, and it's just going to continue this positive spiral and everything's great and dandy. On the flip side, they thought there would be a negative spiral with job demands, right? So if you've got a lot of job demands, you're going to be more tired. You're going to be depleting your resources. You're not going to be feeling as good on the job. You're going to lead to burnout. And that's going to create it's going to hinder your psychological capital, which would then lead to more demands and more burnout and kind of this negative spiral.
That makes sense to me. I mean, I think, I think I could picture where, you know, you're down, you feel like you don't have what you need to do your job, you're feeling kind of hopeless, and probably to some extent, like, you start paying attention more to the things that aren't going well, you know, you're like, oh, now I'm more down, and I perceive lower resources, I think it's less likely I'll be able to, and, like, you just keep continuing that train of thought, like, I have less hope. And now even, you know, who knows, because it's all self-report. Like, even if you used to think something was positive, you might look at it and be like, well, but there's a downside. You know what I mean? Like, you might just start viewing things more negatively because you're like stuck in that spiral.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. The negative thing makes a lot of sense. But interestingly, it doesn't actually work out in this study. And both cycles don't work out. So what you see is that, yes, psychological capital could either decrease or increase based on whether you have positive or negative experiences, resources, or demands, but then it doesn't, like, that psychological capital doesn't influence the other side, the work side of things. So in other words, you're engaged, you've got a lot of job resources, your psychological capital is going to go up. But then your psychological capital isn't going to make you more engaged after that.
Yeah, that, and, you know, I know I just mentioned that I thought it would make sense if you get stuck in that negative spiral just based on, like, emotion spirals and, you know, how negative and positive emotions affect your scope of what you pay attention to and all that kind of stuff. But because some of these items are related to, like, more objective resources, that may make a little less sense that you're perceiving those resources to have decreased as a result of decreased psychological capital. You know what I mean? Like, if it was all, like, mental resources, maybe that would make sense, but because there's other things involved, it might be harder to convince yourself that those things are gone.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think the interesting thing, so, like, you know, there's both the positive and negative spiral. The negative spiral doesn't work out exactly the way that they expected. But the thing that I think is the most interesting in the study, and the thing I want to spend the most time on, is the positive spiral not existing and actually having, it's not that it just doesn't exist. It's actually the case that when you have higher psychological capital, you see that people's perceptions of their resources and engagement declines. So there's like a tipping point when you get to a piece where your psychological capital is so high that you are actually seeing a decrease in engagement. And so that is the thing that's super unique and fascinating about this paper, because we have seen that psychological capital can lead to well-being and all these positive things, but we haven't really seen a lot of papers that see this like too much of a good thing effect.
Yeah.
But it seems to be happening here because of the way that they've studied the spiral, if you will.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because when you're thinking about somebody is saying, okay, I've hit this like pretty high level of being optimistic about what's going on, being hopeful about my, you know, ability to achieve goals, feeling like I'm a pretty resilient person. I can bounce back from stuff. I feel really confident in myself. I wonder if when you reach these high levels, if we think about like the vice associated with each of those. So like overconfidence, toxic positivity or over optimism, thinking about like being unrealistic in your hoping or having false hope, like overestimating the extent to which challenges will put barriers in your way, and the extent to which those challenges will be, you know, actual barriers to you, like all those things. Like if you think about a person in that state and now they're like, okay, what's my company giving me? Like, what do I have available to me to do my job? It might be a situation where you become like a little too high on the horse. You know what I mean? Where you're like, well, that's not good enough for me. Like I'm great at my job. Good things are coming for me. I'm going to like kill it here and nothing's holding me back. Like what's with this like pittance of resources that I have, you know what I mean? Whereas like, if you were more realistic about it, you might not have an outsized view of what you should be getting or what you require.
Yeah, I think that's definitely one way to think about it and a potential theory that they didn't talk about. So you're bringing in a new idea that somebody could be researching. They had a couple of other ideas as to why this might happen. And I think ultimately both could be right. Like what happens on the high end of these scales? Like if you're too confident, if you're like way on the far end of self-efficacy, it could be the case that you're like, I'm amazing. What is happening? Why am I not getting the resources? But it could also be the case what they described is having too high of performance expectations and therefore taking on more work or too much because you're like, well, I can do all of these things. Like I'm super great at my job. And now like leading yourself down a path where you end up being a little bit of a workaholic because you set yourself up for these like grandiose expectations that are actually still difficult to achieve, even if you are extremely good at your job.
Yeah. So I set like a new bigger goal and now the resources. So if we think about it like a ratio, like, okay, I have level 3 resources to, you know, face a job that has level 3 demands, right? But now I'm setting level 5 demands for myself, but I'm still in an environment with level 3 resources, right? Yep. Like, and they're not matching. That also makes some sense.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. And then the other thing that they called out is this idea of an optimism bias, where people are so prone to think that things are going to work out that they actually take risks on the job that are not helpful. So kind of similar to the story I shared up front about some colleagues that I had that were really positive about how things are going to go with the client and they just didn't do any risk mitigation because they're like, it's going to be great. Imagine if they didn't have a team around them and that went and did some of the risk mitigation strategies and then went into a meeting that didn't go well, right? Like somebody came in and said, hey, like, this actually sucks, or I don't like this, or this is a weird thing. And they hadn't thought about it going poorly and they didn't know what to do, right? That could have really hurt them from a performance perspective and could really make them feel like less engaged because now there's like these bad things that are happening and they weren't expecting the bad things, right? There's not a realistic view on what can occur. And so I think being super realistic about it, like you can be optimistic, you can err on the side that it's going to work out fine without getting so extreme that you don't see any of the risks or challenges that you might face.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. And, you know, one of the things that one of the larger literatures on false hope, just at least the hope part of it, is in the medical profession and sort of ethical debates over whether or not you should give people hope in more dire circumstances. So you know that this person is not going to survive. Should you tell them that there's a chance that they'll survive, or should you be honest? Like, what's the ethical thing to do? And the reason it becomes an ethical conundrum is, like, if you just throw in the towel entirely, people do fewer behaviors that will actually help to elongate their lives. So, like, let's say somebody's, like, got cancer and the prognosis is bad and the, you know, medical team pretty much knows that this person is going to eventually end up dying from cancer. They might stop doing health behaviors that would allow them to live for a year and would decrease their life to 6 months, let's say, if they are not provided hope about the possibility that, hey, you could live, like you could make it. But if you provide them with too much hope, there's also some research that shows that it can decrease your lifespan and your willingness to fight in the end when you find out that it's like worse than you thought. Like, you get overwhelmed with negative emotions, and it actually, like, the blow of learning more suddenly, like, hey, I know we've been telling you for a year that you can make it, but you've got 2 weeks left, like, makes those last 2 weeks much more excruciating and much more painful for the family and the person to grapple with. And then they don't have time to plan like the way they would have if they had a more realistic understanding of what was going on. So there's like ethical conundrums, and more or less what they suggest people do is find a balance, which I think makes some sense that, you know, you shouldn't tell the person like, yes, you're going to live. You should tell the person, you know, there's a 0.001 chance that you could, because that's true. The likely scenario is this, but if you act as if like the 0.001 is true, you will improve the quality of your life until that point in time. And so, like, let's make our goal and improve quality of life for the time that you have left, as well as like the, you know, somewhat miraculous potential that maybe you'll be in that like very small percentage. That seems to be where people have landed in terms of their advice, but it's similar to what you're saying around like this realism balance.
Yes, luckily less heavy in the work environment, but
true.
But I think it's spot on and really good advice that like having this balance is super important, because you want to be working towards these like big things, positive things, but you can't be so rosy glassed about it. Glass? That makes no sense, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You can't be so positive about it and just like completely forget that there might be challenges and hiccups and problems and it could derail completely. Like, you need to be fully aware of those things too. So you do need that balance. And I think ultimately what this paper drives home is we want to improve people's psychological capital. We want to do this because there are really positive things associated with it. But we just need to find the right balance. And when you're, as a leader, if you're working with employees that, you know, have been really great, have been engaged for a long time, they've been working hard, and then suddenly you start to see a shift in like maybe they're seeming a little bit too confident about things, or they're like really, really optimistic about everything to a point where you're starting to get a sense that there's just their engagement's decreasing a little bit. Then you know that that's something you could think about. Like, how can we help correct some of that and show them that there are additional challenges to get them kind of back to that like ideal level of psychological capital? There's a lot more research that needs to be done, but I think it's a kind of a good warning sign, right? If you start to see engagement decline, what are things to look at? There's a lot of things, but I think something that people don't typically think about is somebody's level of like optimism and resilience and hope and self-efficacy, and if they're out of whack.
Yeah, I think that's a great takeaway. And also just to think about, you know, like you said, if you're seeing someone becoming kind of detached from reality, it doesn't seem like they're anticipating challenges appropriately. They're, you know, avoiding addressing red flags in a situation. It might be worth sharing some of this information with them. Like, look, you know, I really appreciate that you generally have a very positive attitude and you have really great, like, positive expectations for how things are going to work out. But I do think it's important that we pay attention to some of the real challenges that we might face, and maybe we could work on you know, balancing that out a little bit better together. So I think it's a good thing to look for the warning signs of sort of like the indicators on the other end that people are, you know, maybe experiencing lower engagement for this reason. But it's also good to think about, you know, if you see the behaviors themselves and you want to try to help people to take a more balanced approach. So I think this is really, really helpful for leaders in general. And I'm glad that you brought this article to our attention.
Yeah, happy to share it. I'm excited to see where this research goes. And maybe in a few years, we'll come back and have even more details about this ideal level of psychological capital. So stay tuned.
Yay.
All right. And for all of our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. And as we mentioned at the top of the podcast, super excited about our book. So if you want to follow along our journey, definitely recommend you sign up for our email list. There's a link in the bio. Not the bio. What are we talking about? We're on a podcast here. Link in our show notes. So please go check that out. Sign up for our email list and get all of the updates about our super exciting book that will be coming out in about a year-ish. Ah, amazing. Thank you for listening. Thriving at Work, a Worker Being podcast, is hosted by us, Dr. Patricia Grabarek and Dr. Katina Sawyer, and produced by Allie Johnson.